This episode of Social Jello is brought to you by Blueberry. Check out Blueberry for a free internet station, along with several podcasts, including Social Jello with Angelo. I always appreciate your patience while I get through these ads. Yes, BLUBRRY.com. Also, it's brought to you by the Kobe Fight Network. It's at KOBE-Fighting, FIGTING.net. Check out Kobe Fighting for any of your MMA or martial art training needs in Japan. I personally coach kickboxing there along with stand up for MMA. We have a pretty awesome jiu-jitsu, no-gi jiu-jitsu instructor that comes in. He's ranked second in the Kansai Regional Championships, Sui-san. So come out, train with us. All levels welcome. All right, without further ado, this is Social Jello with Angelo. All right, what's up, everyone? Welcome to the Social Jello with Angelo show. As I mentioned earlier, today we're going to be doing an interview with... I'm just going to have you jump on in, and I hope I don't butcher your name here. Kate Ashcraft? Is that correct?
Yep.
All right. Cool. Well, Kate, thanks for coming on the show. I guess just kind of starting off, how... I wanted to talk about how I met you. I met you on Facebook, and you accepted my invite, and this Facebook is my public profile. I have my private and public profile. In your case, you're also a podcaster, right?
Correct. Yes, I have a podcast.
Cool. What is your podcast all about?
Well, it's called Unbuckling the Bible Belt. It's basically based around myself along with, right now, currently just one other co-host. We usually have four of us, but, you know, life comes up. So people come and go off the show and come back in. But we all live in the Bible Belt up here in the United States. Two are from Tennessee, one's from Georgia, and myself, I'm in Kentucky.
Wow.
So we all kind of get together and we discuss social, political, economical issues that kind of relate to secular living because we're all atheists. On my show.
that's really fucking cool. I think that's one of the things I noticed when I added you, and that really, I think, it throws off a lot of liberal states. I'm personally from California, and one of the stereotypes that Californians, and specifically Southern Californians, I'm from San Diego originally, have of the Midwestern states, is especially after the last election, is that everybody's a bunch of conservatives and religious and all those other things.
Majority is, unfortunately. That's why we have our podcast, because we think it's really important to make sure that there's a voice for the minority, ideologically speaking anyway, in the state, as far as ideological values.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
It's important to have that voice. There's a lot of folks that can't speak up in these states, these red states, as they call them, simply because they do. They risk losing their job. One of my co-hosts, Joe Kindick, he can't show his face. He's not even using his real name, neither was Adam Fusion or Sharon Bush. All three of them could not show their actual faces, give out their actual identities, because they'll lose their job. They'll lose family members. It's serious. Business like that here in the red states, at least.
Wow. That's interesting. So what you're saying is they'll actually lose their jobs because I was having this I don't call it a debate, because a debate would mean that one person is trying to win some sort of argument. I don't know if you've noticed on my
having a discussion is different. I always tell people conversation is great, but discussion is better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was having a discussion with a Trump supporter in San Francisco, from San Francisco, and he was saying about how what you just mentioned from his perspective is what he feels is happening to him in the liberal states, that if he comes out as a Trump supporter, He has a fear of losing his job. He has a fear of being, what's the word I'm looking for, oppressed by liberals, mm-hmm. which is which is a really interesting take on it. What do you think about that?
I think it's highly possible in certain pockets of cities or businesses to face overzealous, you know, political or ideological favoritism. Absolutely. I don't doubt that can happen. I know he's probably has seen a lot of what's happened to some people who come out with the Trump support, and then they get, there's been a couple incidents where people have been beaten in the street. I think we've all seen that horrible video where a guy was literally carjacked, beaten in the street and everything, and they were just going on, the people that were assaulting him, this was like four people and one man, just, yeah, he voted for Trump, and they were going all after him, you know. That can happen, just like we've seen it happen with the liberal side of things as well. And I think it should be very clear, though, that atheism does not necessarily lead to liberalism. One of my co-hosts, Joe, I would say is very much conservative about a lot of things. He's got different views than I do about guns. He's got different views than I do about economy, probably. As far as human rights, he's on the same page. I think that's the one thing I see within atheist and secular circles. We can take a more humanistic approach to things than those who have a rule book to follow.
Yeah, that's really cool. So what you're trying to say, if I understood correctly, even from an atheist perspective, being atheist doesn't necessarily de facto make you a liberal.
Oh no! I mean, I've met atheist racists. I've met atheist bigots. I've met atheists that believe in ghosts. I've met atheists who vote Republican. I've met atheists who are very, very, very into patriarchy. I've met pro-life atheists. Just because you're an atheist doesn't mean anything other than you don't have a lack of God. Where you go from there is up to you. It's just you don't believe in God. That's it. So that's why I tell people all the time, yeah, I'm an atheist, but I'm also a humanist. I see myself as, I'm a secular humanist is how I see it. You know, I do have faith in humanity. The majority of the time, man does the right thing. I might not get to see it in my area where I'm living at in my bubble, but that doesn't mean, therefore, it doesn't happen outside my bubble. I'm aware of this, and I see enough examples of it. So, just, yeah, every walk of life you'll see with atheists.
I see. Yeah, me, I've had friends that are great friends that are atheists. Me personally, I don't know, it's hard to explain.
That's fair. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I think everybody's got their own translation of whatever their bigger meaning is, you know, and more power to you. Just if one of my buttons says keep your theocracy off my democracy, and we get along fine.
Yeah, that's exactly where I kind of stand. You know, I was raised, well, I haven't talked about this on the show, but well, why not? My upbringing, yeah. my family were actually Jehovah's Witnesses. And
fun.
Yeah. And you know, as time went by, by the time I was a teenager, I wanted to get out of the religion, but as you know, it's a very back then. I still have friends that are Jehovah's Witnesses now, and they'll contest that things have changed from then into now. But as far as my personal experience, and back then, it was more of a cult, and it was very difficult to leave because leaving would mean pretty much not seeing your family anymore.
Yep.
So it was really hard to kind of negotiate that. And as time went by, I was finally able to get out. Not really. I never was kicked out. I just they lost my records, thankfully,
mm-hmm.
and I just kind of disappeared off their radar. And my family members that were involved we kind of split apart. There wasn't too many of them that were in, thankfully, and eventually it did lead to a big split between me and my mom. But my parents were separated, and that kind of gave me a way to get away, and I ended up staying with my dad, and long story short, after all that, in my research for my search for spirituality, if you will, I kind of gained, I found a lot of comfort in Zen Buddhism without, without actually, more from a psychology perspective. I studied, I have a master's in psychology, and I was looking a lot into mindfulness as a way to, more as a way to heal and for more physiological reasons. I'm also a martial artist, so it was already kind of there for a long time. But definitely I'm not one to grab my beliefs and and try to put them onto others. That's why I say it's complicated, because even in the readings that I did on Zen Buddhism, they put in one of the books, like, don't tell people that you are a Zen Buddhist. So I don't tell people I'm a Zen Buddhist. I read about Zen, but that's as far as that goes.
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, I think it probably helps, with your own struggles, having gone through, you felt, what it's like to realize the emotional extortion, I always call it, behind staying, leaving. People go, oh, well, if you know it's not real, just leave. And it's like, well, you're giving up family, you're giving up community, possibly. You're giving up part of your identity that has a lot of other people connected to it. And if you're not part of God's MCI share plan, they might not call you anymore, And I think that's something that a lot of people sometimes take for granted. And it's a rough transition. That's why I support groups like Recovering from Religion Foundation. I think they're a very, very important part for people who are either leaving, need to know what their rights are. You're fortunate, sounds like, that you had family outside the fold already to rely on a little bit. That's a really good thing that you had that.
Yeah, I got really lucky that my dad was more reasonable. He still held on to some of the religious beliefs, but he was always a little more of a moderate, if you will, where he really didn't feel that we should be evangelists within the same religion. He wasn't really big on going out there and preaching and telling people that they needed to convert. Which made things a lot easier later in his life.
Yeah.
Mine's
been an awkward struggle. I grew up Pentecostal.
Oh, wow. No. My family, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because so my grandmother was originally a Pentecostal from Puerto Rico. My family's Puerto Rican. And Pentecostals are huge in Puerto Rico.
You guys have already got the next Jesus down there. You know who I'm talking about, right? I can't remember his name, but like, he is Jesus reincarnate, in that there's not really sin anymore because he already died the first time and basically canceled out sin. He's got a lot of followers. He's big down there. I'm big on cults, by the way. Well, I mean, cults kind of a pejorative, but I do a lot of different things on different cults, and Puerto Rico's got a really big guy down there that's popular.
Holy
shit. He is Jesus.
Jesus. Let me see. I'm literally looking this up right now. Controversial Puerto Rican man.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I tried over and over. I sent invites all the time to try and get this guy on my show. I really want to have him on my show.
Oh, my gosh. I'm just going to turn this to the camera real quick. Here's a photo of the dude right here. And and again, my listeners, I'm going to have notes to some of our topics on the podcast on my website, so check that out later.
Oh, this will be a good one, folks. Definitely check it out.
Wow, so this guy really... Well, you know what? I got to give him credit. It looks like he has a round earth behind him in the photo, so he's not a flat earth believer.
Thankfully, he definitely is not a flat earther.
Wow.
It's hilarious. Yeah, I've read your post lately, how you've been having fun with flat earthers and hearing their perspectives. And have you had the chance to talk to any hollow earthers?
What's that? I'm sorry.
Hollow earthers?
Hollow earthers. You know,
They're out there.
I'm sure they are. They're pouring in on my Twitter as we speak. You know, it's funny how that all that started, because I came across them not even looking for them. I was just maybe 2 months ago, one of the political topics. My Facebook is connected to Twitter, so everything I say on Facebook jumps onto Twitter. And as a joke, in the middle of all these people calling each other hill bots and Trumpsters, I kind of jumped in and as a joke said, "Hey, you know, with everyone arguing about politics nowadays, at least we can all agree that the world is not flat," as a joke. And that's when it's 2 months ago. Oh yeah, wrong statement. 2 months ago, that's where I found my first flat earther, who sent me a tweet saying it's flat, bud. And I actually did not even take him seriously. I thought he was just joking, like it was one of those trolling accounts. And I was joking back and forth with him until I realized the guy was serious. And I just kind of left it at that. And then a few weeks later, I was listening to a podcast I'm going to mess this guy's name up, so I'm just going to try to say it correct. Is it DeGrasse or DeGrasse? The famous...
I'm talking about Neil deGrasse Tyson.
DeGrasse. I didn't want to mess up his last name.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, yeah. Neil deGrasse. I was listening to a podcast with Neil deGrasse talking about how he got trolled by them. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, that's...
Oh, yeah.
It's a real thing.
They get those guys a lot.
It's a real thing.
I imagine even Bill Nye gets them quite a bit.
Yeah, I was just blown back by what he was saying, because I was like, that's exactly what happened to me unintentionally. And then after I was done listening to the podcast, again, I thought I'd be funny, and I posted that eating a steak comment, which I don't regret it at all. I'm talking to a lot of them now. That wasn't originally why I put the comment out there. I was just trying to, again, be funny. And it's led to some interesting conversations, and I'm pretty sure one of them might be a holoist, because they mentioned that in the hashtag holoist in one of their comments. So, but I haven't dove into their research. I'm actually writing a piece right now on conspiracy theories, and from a psychology perspective, kind of going over why people kind of gravitate towards that. Like what makes conspiracy theories so interesting, and why people like a lot. I think one of the assumptions that the general population make about people who believe in conspiracy theories, they just pass it off as that's just crazy. And from a psychologist point of view, whenever I hear the word crazy, I'm really interested in how crazy works. So
I engage folks that are different, like Jada Franson. She's one of the leading people for that ultra-conservative, almost white supremacist group, Britain's First. I mean, they have people in Parliament now. I have her on the show. My attitude is you kind of put them underneath a microscope. You don't realize that you're not sitting there to fight and argue. You just want to understand how they can think this way, you know. And I don't know about for you, you have the psychology background, but for me, I see a lot of escapist ideas and goals in mind when people latch on to these types of just completely way out there ideas about reality. It just seems like escapism all day.
Yeah, you know, what I learned in psychology is no matter what population that you're looking at, regardless of nationality or race, you're always going to have a bell curve, right? And you're always going to have you're always going to have outliers. You're always going to have your top 15, 10% geniuses that just they're weirdos in their own way. Because they're so smart, they become outliers. And then you have the people that society would consider failures, people that don't adhere to anything, people that don't pass tests. And from a psychology standpoint, it's not so much that these people are dumb. It's actually just that they see their perspective is so different. It's making them an outlier on another side of the bell curve. To just pass them off as dumb and ignorant, I believe, is not a really great way to handle the situation, because it's kind of I don't know if you saw an article I posted a few days ago about cognitive dissonance and how when you confront a belief by kind of presenting evidence and trying to tackle it down, it's like throwing the article was saying it's like throwing water on a grease fire.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why like I'm always really careful. I try to be careful about how I respond. Now, if I get trolled, I'm working on when someone attacks me, not attacking them back. I try to keep it civil, but I try not to resort to calling them names, but I have been known to be a little mean if I get pushed around.
Yeah, I find in the long run, if you really want a discussion and not trying to accumulate Reddit points, your best move is to just dismantle their argument, and if all they have to fall back on is name calling and accusations, you know the conversation's over.
Yeah.
I've dealt with that on my own page not too long ago regarding Sam Harris. Someone had re-edited his video on the truth about God and put a lot of just kind of an appeal to emotion video just with the different types of scenes that they added in it. But I knew it was something that someone was more likely to listen to and watch than if they were just watching Sam Harris standing there drooling away, you know?
Yeah.
So as soon as I put that video up, yeah, it kind of lit a firecracker under a couple people's rear ends, but that's not true Christianity, and it's like, okay, this is Richard Scotsman. Well, you're not being fair, you're scapegoating religion. And I said, but really, I was just saying that they're all death cults. I didn't really make a comment about Sam Harris's assertion, you know. I'm very polite and kind of keep that in mind. That if you want to talk about whether I agree with the other opinions that Sam Harris is putting forward, we can discuss that, but I'm discussing this right now, you know. You kind of keep bringing them back, and it worked. You know, the gentleman kept going, and while he was still kind of a little prickly, to put it nicely, he still conversated, and by the end of it, he was quite pacified and relaxed. You could tell his tone had changed, which was good, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't do those kind of conversations to change anyone's mind. I have those conversations where everyone else can see it, not only to help them understand how to engage with folks with different points of view, they can also understand where he's coming from, how he's thinking. You know, there's a way to make it a productive discourse. That's all I ever want. I don't want to sit there and just argue with people all day. That's just stupid. I don't have time for it.
Yeah. I think I find that once someone resorts to name calling, like just going back to that flat earth example, most of them are actually, and I posted that on one of the comments, they're actually, most of them are really nice people. They've been willing to hear me out. They've been willing to actually talk about how they came to believe about flat earth. Most of them. So far, only one of them has jumped on and just started calling me names. And even that person, I the first response to him I said was, you know, congratulations, you're the first person to use ad hominem attacks as we so far everyone's been really nice. You're the first one that came in calling me you know, derogatory terms, and even then I still kind of tried to jokingly start a conversation, but you know, eventually it just kind of dissipated, and I try not to focus too much on what I would consider true trolling.
Mm-hmm,
it's
exactly. That's the thing. You just ignore it. You
yeah.
Just kind of ignore it at one point. And that's an important, you know, part of discussion and talking with people. You know, there's a point where you have to put the boundary line down and go, okay, we're done here. You know, there's nothing further to discuss with you. I'm sorry, maybe another day. I always leave it open-ended and friendly. That's the main thing I try to get people to understand when they're discussing things with folks. I mean, I don't know how this person would have felt knowing, you know, I mean, believing in the flat earth, I mean, that's Muhammad Yusuf believes in that, and that's like the Islamic leader of Boko Haram, you know?
Yeah, that's
kind of messed up, so you feel like, oh, well, all these other atheist nations did this or that, and I'm like, Haram, you know, I just leave it alone.
Yeah, that's, it's, yeah, it's something else. And I don't know, what do you think? There's been a lot of talk right now about almost an anti-intellectual movement happening in the U.S. What do you think about that statement?
I think it's true because there's definitely a culture war right now. And that's actually, it's ironic, my co-host Joe on last week's show had said that the real social war going on right now is intellectualism. It's big right now. And I don't know if it's so much. People are definitely lazier. They don't want to read their bills and the articles that they quote. It drives me crazy, you know. For example, we had discussed this whole thing with Trump denying press into his White House briefing, and people are screaming about the First Amendment. And I'm like, I'm not saying it's okay, but where was this anger with Obama? Where was this anger with Bush and with Clinton, you know? And because Joe was all about the First Amendment being trampled on. I said, but it's the rules. And he didn't realize that was the rules. The White House can let in and out whoever they want, you know, thanks to the Fairness Doctrine being eliminated.
Yeah, and that was in the 80s, right?
Yeah, that was the early 80s. Reagan did it. It was something that I said, my aggravation is that people are only upset because it's King Cheeto and not because that's the rule. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, they need to focus their anger off this man as the person and look at the policy that's already in place to allow him to do these things to begin with. That's where you need to be angry. That's where you need things to be changed. Not everybody's going to agree with me on that view, and that's okay. I'm a political atheist, too, so I get it from both sides all the time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I one of the things I'm always saying is, yeah, I hate Trump for a lot of reasons. Before it all started, it's not like I hated Trump because of all the political stuff. I actually hated Trump a long time ago, before he was even running for office.
Yeah.
It was this thing where I was listening to a podcast and I was hearing about how he was using his money to pretty much take over New York. And he was working with, he was kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say something so extreme as to say that he was working with the mafia, even though that's what the person that being interviewed was saying. But he was definitely strong arming in New York and New Jersey, using his money to buy out people. And from the sounds of it, it really sounded like racketeering in the literal means. So like, even if I were to believe or not believe, he was definitely using his money to forcefully influence public policy before he was a politician. And that's why I didn't like Trump. It had nothing to do with what happened now. So immediately when I saw that he was running and that he was gaining favor, I was like, oh no, like that's not good for completely different reasons.
Definitely.
But one of the fears I've had, not fears, but one of the things that concerns me recently is this whole thing where now, like you said, that people are kind of using Trump as a scapegoat. Not that I like Trump, not that I agree with any of his policies, and I'm always saying that, but I feel like they're almost crying wolf or crying Trump, as I've been saying, where like you said, there's things that have been fucked up with our government for a long time now, and they're kind of acting like Trump was the one who did it. And they did some similar things with Obama as well. There were some things that from a conservative perspective, things about the government they didn't like that they were passing off as, hey, Obama was the one that did this. But as you mentioned, like if you keep going back into history, you start finding out that our government has had a lot of fucked up shit going on for a long time.
They have, and it's something where folks, and that's my problem. It's like this whole business with back to Trump and not allowing certain press members into the White House briefing. Folks are like, but that's never happened before. And I'm like, well, a White House briefing, maybe not. But it's not like he's not tweeting what he's talking about at the same time as he's speaking. It's not like there's not other platforms that they're going to get their information from anyway. You know, I'm like, okay, so what? But there's still, you have plenty of time. All these other presidents picked and chose who could or could not have private interviews or attend public events. You know, it's like you need to understand, okay, we know you don't like Trump, but the problem is that the media also knows that what they're purporting is not completely accurate either. They're not saying Trump didn't let us in, our First Amendment's being suppressed, just like blah, 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 even though it's the rules because of this. No, they're just leaving, they are twisting the view of this, the perspective. So in a way, they're validating Trump's claim that the news, the media cannot be trusted.
So you were saying about how by accusing Trump of trying to keep the media out, it's actually fueling some of his own rhetoric.
I'd say it's even validating it, really, and that's what's sad about it. It's like, yes, Trump did. I guess it's like when you leave out information, that's still misleading when you omit. What is that, lying by omission, I think would be the word, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a technical term. When the media does not explain that, yes, they could say, for the first time in U.S. history, a president has denied certain press members to White House briefings. That's fair. And they can say he did so under him being allowed to because of X reason. They don't do that. They're not making it okay by giving the false perspective, okay? And I wish they would do that, but they were wanting to cause problems for Trump. They wanted to punish him. So how will the media punish him? Oh, we'll just omit some important details. And by doing this, then most of Trump's supporters aren't going to go double-check looking in. They're just going to go, oh, yeah, what he said. And then the liberals on this other side are like, what the media is saying. You know what I'm saying? I'm one of those people. It had me alarmed. I started looking into it. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. He's allowed to do this.
Yeah.
I don't understand completely what the problem is. You know, yes, I don't think it's right, but I can't be mad at Trump for using rules that are afforded to him to be used to begin with. And then when I looked into history and saw that, you know, Obama would pick and choose, and it was mostly just liberal agencies that would come in for private information. You know what I'm saying? And you start looking through history, you're just like, oh,
this is
I can't really be mad at him because everybody else is doing it too.
Yeah, it's just how the game is played.
Exactly. I mean, the fact that they weren't allowed at a pretty well broadcast briefing anyway, really, that doesn't bother me that much anyhow. I'm sorry, but it doesn't. I mean, everybody and their mother was still there. As you know, he's only going to bring in mostly conservative news outlets when he has them in-house privately, and that's what Obama and Bush and Clinton and all the other ones did. So I don't like Trump, but I'm not going to sit there and not do diligence when it comes to information I'm receiving. You know, I tell people all the time, look for that little bit of meat in a really big fat steak.
Yeah, no, that's
what it is.
It is, and I think one of the things for the longest I avoided talking about politics until this whole election, because it was at one point it was just unavoidable. And when I decided to finally step in and say, okay, I know it's going to piss people off. I know people aren't going to agree. I know I'm probably going to lose some subscribers or followers. But I was like, well, first of all, I'm not that big. So I'm still kind of starting my project anyway. And I'm still kind of gaining my followers. And what do I really want?
Exactly.
What kind of followers do I really want?
Be who you are. Be who you are is what I say.
Yeah. So,
you know,
so when I finally...
Unless you're ill-informed.
Yeah. And
ill-informed, then be very careful.
Yeah, that's... So when I finally stepped in, I realized I'm going to use what I know. You know, I have a master's in psychology, and this is what I learned in psychology, and I'm going to come at it from a psychological perspective. That's what social jello is about. That's why it's social jello, coming from the idea of social psychology. Although I did get attacked by a few Trump supporters thinking I was a socialist. But that's a different, social jello. You're the most reasonable socialist I've talked to. I'm like, I'm not a socialist, but that's cool.
Yeah.
But when I finally stepped in, I'm really wary. You know, the Stanford experiment, right, with Zimbardo.
Yeah.
And what that really showed for me was how no matter what your beliefs are, if you're put in the right environment, that's what really makes people into monsters. And we create, as humans, we create our monsters. We create our devils. We create our demons. We've done this for a long time. And whenever I start seeing people saying this person is the devil, or this person is evil, or this person is, and they start dehumanizing them, that's when I always try to take a critical step back and really look at, okay, what is this person doing? I need evidence of what they're doing. And I know I've gotten into so much shit for saying what I just said when it comes to Trump. And it's not like I'm saying, hey, I don't like Trump. So far I've been on boat. Anytime I see something that I don't agree with, I'll state it. I don't agree with it because of A, B, C reason. But I'm not going to jump up and say that he's a Nazi. I can't. Yeah, he does shit that I don't agree with. But until I see him, I've met real Nazis. And I put this on my Facebook. I've met real Nazis. And even when I did my research on racial relations that tested people for white supremacist ideology, I found that a lot of Americans follow white supremacist ideology, even people of color. That they think that white supremacist ideology cannot be a part of you because of your race is a huge mistake. And that's something I came across in my research, is that you can be an African American and hold on to white supremacist ideology and hate Mexicans. And you can be Mexican and hold on to white supremacist ideology and hate African Americans. This is because race is a social construct. I'm even making a mistake by saying African American, because what we're actually talking about is the tone of our skin, black and white. And
yes, exactly. I was going to say, there's a lot of African Americans that have never been to Africa, and they're just I have friends of mine that are like, why do they call me African? I'm not from Africa. I was born here.
Yeah, it's a landmine. I remember in one of my master's courses, we were doing a conference and we were presenting our research, and one of the psychology students went up and started talking about his research, and he wasn't the top of the class. He was one of those C's get degrees guys. He actually said it like, oh, so you get a degree anyway, right? So he never really, he was kind of just going through the ropes for his degree. And when he went up there and started saying black, he started like interchanging black with African American, with blacks, and it drove at the time the Black Student Union was there, and it drove them absolutely nuts. But it was funny because some of them were mad at him for saying African American, but some of them were mad at him for saying black, and they were like, you should use the word people of color. And it made me realize, like, okay, well, all right, it's totally fair. If you identify with something as a person and you want people to talk to you and express to you what you identify as, that's the wonderful freedom that we have in America, is that we can do that. But it does get really tricky when it comes to identity, when it comes to race, and when it comes to ethnicity. And that's one of the reasons I can't step up right now. And yeah, I'll tell you, Trump adheres to white supremacist ideology. Many of his people, the people he's picked, adhere to white supremacist ideology. Are they Nazis? Well, again, growing up, I met real Nazis, the swastika kind. And he's not a Nazi. Are they KKK? Well, growing up, I met real KKK members. And no, he's not. Was he supported by the KKK? Did they donate to his campaign? That's a different story. They do, but the KKK has donated to a lot of campaigns, you know. So again,
because you get campaign donations from a certain group does not mean you're part of that group. They just, you're going to pull out different supporters from different walks of life. But when you bring up like ideology and ethnicity and culture, I find that it's hard sometimes for people to accept when you ask a question. They have this perception that when you're asking a question, you're passing a judgment. I don't know if you've ever noticed that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something I try to get people to understand. When I'm asking questions, it's not to form a judgment. It's to help me understand. You know, I have to ask questions, and I will have to question your logic and reasoning behind it. You know, not everything that you think is the same as the next person in your same shoes. For example, we literally had on a member of the new Black Panther Party on our show for one episode talking about Black Lives Matter, the protests, you know, Afrocentrism, the whole nine yards. And then I had another man on, Dion McNeil. He identifies as Black, and he sees a lot of what's going on in America, not necessarily as racism, but it's more of a classism problem. Try that one out for a sec. So you have to not just look to one source as the authority for that information either. And I know that sometimes what you decide on at the end of the day is not going to be accepted by every single person of that culture that you run into. But it's a tricky situation, you know. It's what it's going to be. I don't want everybody to look at me and act like I owe reparations. I have people that will turn around and say there's no such thing as white privilege. I see it all, you know. And I just, people are like, well, just because you're talking to them makes you, like with Trump, a member of supremacist group, but with the KKK, and it's like, oh, geez. I don't think so. I don't want to live in an echo chamber hearing only what I want to hear, because if I'm only hearing what I want to hear that reinforces my thoughts and opinions on something, not exactly getting the full comparison of what I need to know. And it's important.
No, and I think what you're talking about, again, is you're trying your best to not be the victim of cognitive dissonance, not be a victim of your brain.
Bias.
Yeah, your brain has, we, our own biological biases. It's in there. It's in our hardware, if you will. So That's why it's really important to listen to both sides. And the reason I created that Facebook and I started adding people from both. I tried. If they leave, they leave. No matter how outlandish they may sound, is because when I hear someone telling me, a real strong conservative telling me that they were reprimanded by someone who was a liberal and they were told something that was completely outlandish by a liberal, before I started adding some really outlandish liberals, I used to say, hey, you know, you need to stop generalizing. I will say, don't generalize, please. Don't say all liberals.
Put the paintbrush away, please.
Yeah. When you start saying stuff like, oh, libs, whenever I hear my friends saying libs, the ones that are conservative, I say, hey, remember, I'm a liberal, okay? Like, I'm a moderate, but I do lean towards a liberal. And the only thing I can ask you is to say that some, just add some, or be specific about who you're talking about. I didn't say all conservatives just now, and I said some of my friends that are conservative.
Yeah,
Because I've also met plenty of my friends that are conservative that don't feel that way. Plenty, some. These are great words to not generalize.
It is. I mean, I drive people batty. I mean, I actively work to get people influenced in government. I've got a friend of mine that's running for a city council. I'm going to help him write some of his speeches and questions and whatnot that he's going to answer. And people see that. And then they'll also see, I've got other friends who support Trump. And they're just like, how can you even have these people in your feed? How can you even associate with them? If you're associating with them, you're this, you're that, the tribute of the whole birds of a flat feather nonsense. And it's like you have to understand where they're coming from, what their fear is, their concerns are, if you then want to show them how they're wrong in their perception of you. If you don't take the time to understand what has them worried and how they got to this concern, you can't alleviate that to even have a dialogue. You know, it's a really, really huge problem in this country. I've said, you know, I've seen a civil war on Facebook. I hate Facebook right now. I hate it.
It's pretty bad.
As soon as I see someone, if you like blah, 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 unfriend me now, I immediately unfollow them. Whether they're a good friend of mine or not, I will not follow. I don't want to see their garbage in my newsfeed at that point. So when you can open up your mind a little bit, but they'll jump in on my conversations and stuff, and I encourage it because discussion is necessary. It just drives me absolutely crazy with how all up in arms, all these walls. I told people the other day on our podcast, it was just like, you know, folks, it looks like the government's more than accomplished what they were looking for. We're too busy infighting amongst each other again. You know, we cannot have this constant infighting between one another. Just communication is so difficult in this country.
No, it is. It really is. And, you know, I have to openly admit that when Trump got elected, I was one of those people. I was. Mm-hmm. I jumped in.
A lot of them were.
You know, I was really pissed off. And I'm not a Hillary supporter. I voted green as a protest vote. But, I jumped on. I was one of those people that said, if you voted for Trump, you're a racist. And I said all that stuff out of anger. And then I violated my own code that and I know, right? I studied psychology, and I know that when you're really angry, when you're playing to your emotions and your brain is kind of taken over, that is not the time to write something down.
It isn't.
You should stay away. If you write it down.
You probably would have unfriended me because during election season, I don't care who you're voting for. I just want you to go and start participating. I want you to get in the habit of participating in government. Because if Cenk from the Young Turks could go from as red red Republican as you can get to who he is today, then that tells me it's not a bad thing to encourage people to participate, even if they're going to vote for a party you don't agree with.
Can you say that person's name one more time? I'm sorry.
Cenk Uygur. Cenk, he's with the Young Turks. He's the main host on the Young Turks.
Oh.
I think it's C-E-N-K is how it's pronounced.
All right.
Spelled.
What I'll do is I'll put it in my notes and I'll add it to the podcast on the website.
Yeah, I mean, he even speaks about, I mean, this man from back in the 90s, back when they had the free cable TV channels and you could air your own show. Oh, man. I used to laugh and say there's people that you could tell love Reagan so much. This is pretty explicit, but I'm just going to put it out there. This is my analogy. There are some folks in government and the media and people who really just love Reagan so much. You know, they were like licking the gumdrops off the guy's pant leg. Cenk was one of those people. Reagan could do no wrong. He is like completely opposite of that now. You know, he's very well aware. He started listening to those outside sources and started double checking what he was seeing, and finally in good conscience he could no longer do it. And if somebody with that much of a public eye on him can reverse wind like that, then I know I shouldn't worry if I'm picking, you know, people who are 20, 30, 40 to go vote. And it might not be for a party I like. I mean, my boss voted for the first time this year. Part of it was me putting a foot in her butt to go do it. And I know she voted red, and that's okay. But at least she's 55.
Huh.
And she took 55 years, but by God, she got out there and finally voted.
And she never voted until she was 55. Wow.
Mm-mm. And it's so important to me just to get people participating in the process.
Yeah.
But it's sad that it's got to be for the presidential race, because really, I tell folks, the presidential position, while it's important, it's not impervious. And to me, it's not the most important. You don't make change from the top down. You really don't.
No.
Not in this country.
It's actually
from the bottom up.
Exactly.
People need to be voting for their jailers, for their sheriffs, for their city council members, for their election board members. They need to be getting out and voting, because those are the folks we really do influence. And then our senators and our House representatives are going to see what our state wants based on who we've got currently in office on those lower levels. You know, our mayors, our governors, these are the dogs that the government sends to come after us. You know, these are the people we need to be really being careful about who we put in office.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I think it was, I'm going to try to look this up. Sheriff.
Arapaho.
Yes. I've been following his mess when he first got elected sheriff a long time ago. Before he got to where he is now, I was writing about him in my social science. He was part of my undergraduate thesis on how racial profiling works. And it was before he gained all this power, and it made me realize that, you know, these are the kind of people we should be looking at. These are the kind of people we should be really scared of, because these are the people that you're actually going to see when you're driving down the road. I'm never going to see Trump. The chances of me seeing Trump while driving down the road, and this is back then when he was just barely a county sheriff, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, if I drive through Arizona, I can actually have an issue where I get pulled over and I have to deal with something like this, right? In a face-to-face basis.
Just because of how you look.
Yeah, and that to me is a much scarier thought. Yeah, it's scary that these people get up there and they get into power, but like you said, if we can stop these people at a local level, then we can stop the chain before it reaches a point where we can no longer do much about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, and it sends a clear message of what we expect in our societies, in our communities. That's why people have to turn up and vote. That's why I was really, really, people go, oh, well, nobody should have to vote. And I was really upset. But when I look back on it, I was like, well, no, we had an average turnout for the national election, actually.
Yeah.
It was an average turnout, 50%. And you figure, okay, 25% of the vote, a little over, put Trump in office.
Mm-hmm.
That's 25% of the available electorate that showed up to vote. So that's less than 25% of the eligible electorate to put him in office.
Yeah.
And it would have been the same way around if it would have been Clinton. That, to me, fundamentally, is a big problem. You know, it's one of those things that I at least would like this. I always joke and say, I wish it would be mandatory people to come in and vote. And worst case, they come in, and there's a little box at the top for each category, for president, for reps, and, you know, abstain. Just physically mark abstain, and you're good for the day.
Yeah, because what's happening right now is, like you said, statistically speaking, the majority is not speaking for the rest of the country. It's actually...
It's not.
On each side.
Sunni deal, like you see, you know. It's like the whole Shiite versus Sunni deal. I mean, we literally have an evangelical majority in Congress, but they're the minority as far as the representation of the nation. It's kind of mind-boggling when people look at this, so...
Yeah,
it's something to think about.
It is. It's definitely something to think about. We're winding down to our 6 minute, our last 6 minutes here, and I just kind of wanted to get a little more information about your show, if that's cool. Also your background. I know it's going to be hard to sum it in 6 minutes. I should have asked you this first, but this is how I always work.
No, you're fine.
What is your background exactly? Aside from podcasting.
As far as I'm a mother of four, I'm a recovering Pentecostal, meaning, you know, I suffered a lot of traumatic religious trauma, including physical and sexual abuse as a child. Dealt with a lot of that. My cast members all have, you know, two of them pretty mild background with religion. Another co-host of mine had a lot of drama too, growing up with it. But at the end of the day, we're really, our podcast, we're just some really good-hearted people from the South. We're trying to spread information, a little bit of a reality check. I find lately I've been scolding more the general public than I have the government. Because I do believe that we author a lot of our own misery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're at a point in our country where we have to have accountability, and they need to quit looking at the White House, and they need to start looking in their medicine and shaving mirrors in the morning. You know, a lot of where we are is where we put ourselves, and they're still continuing this cycle of scapegoat, and it's got to stop. People have to really understand we have to hold ourselves accountable for what's going on in our government. And if you want to change our generation, future generations, we've got to step forward. My generation, I don't see we're going to see a major change. I mean, I'm 40 this year. But it's something that our background tells us with my writing. Joe, you know, he's conservative. Adam is like, he's in between conservative and semi moderate liberal, I guess. And then, you know, Sharon, she's more liberal probably than I am. I'm conservative on some things and I'm liberal about a lot of others, you know. My priorities are different. And that's what makes our show really good, because we'll argue quite a bit when all four of us are on there.
And do you, as far as your perspectives, like, do you have a background, like, as far as in education, do you have a background, like, in sociology or journalism or anything like that?
No, I wanted to go to school for journalism, but then I had kids by the time I was 17, so I knew I couldn't pay the bills. I'm currently back into journalism.
Okay. So it's more from a journalistic perspective then.
Accounting is my background and web design. That's my yeehaw. My debt that I pay.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's just like an idea. Like, so you're kind of coming at it more from like a journalism perspective, and then
and you're wanted to be a journalist, and I'm an author, I'm a writer, and that's just I get my thoughts out better if it's in my head, whether anybody wants them or not. I write everything out of my head. If that makes any sense.
No, that does. I'm constantly writing for the same reasons.
Yeah, just get it out of my brain so I have room for more. And just keep putting it to paper. No, I actually write novels, but I also, do a lot of blogging and article writing for various outlets.
That's really cool. And what's the name of your podcast again?
It's called Unbuckling the Bible Belt. It's UTBB for short. You can catch it on Spreaker, Unbuckling. You can go to YouTube. That's Unbuckling Podcast. We're on Facebook under UTBB Podcast because of how long our name is. But yeah, if you just look up Google Unbuckling the Bible Belt podcast, you will find it.
All right, cool. And if you don't mind, I guess later, if you want to send me a link, I'll also put the link onto my onto my website. And I guess one more thing before we wrap up here, the background from your co-hosts, are they all from a journalistic perspective, journalism perspective?
No, they are not. But everybody else. Joe's more of an engineering background. Adam Fusion, I believe, is the same. And Sharon is a grade school teacher.
Oh, wow. So
she
education.
Gets to see firsthand kids coming in with indoctrination issues, that kind of thing. And then she gets to keep her mouth shut in a public school and try to deal with it, which is always fun.
Yeah, that especially silencing is very, very real in public education.
It is.
Well, definitely... Kate, I want to thank you very much for being on our show today. And
great coming on.
And I should probably clarify, my show, it used to be our show. I started being a one-man army in this thing. But I definitely want to thank you for being on the show. Thanks again for reaching out to me on Facebook. And for my listeners, definitely check out Unbuckling the Bible Belt podcast. Your main theme is atheism, right?
Kind of.
Well, politics, atheism, science.
Church and state separation is a big hot button for us.
Okay.
But we're not on there railing against God per se or people who worship. I particularly don't. I think that's okay. The best drug out there.
The opiate of the masses, I believe, is what Karl Marx said.
yeah, pretty much. That's the thing that's never going to go away. I just strive to find a good balance for everybody, that's all.
Well,
and so for those that are struggling to get out, to know that they're not alone, they're not crazy, we're here, we're here to listen.
Well, you seem very reasonable after talking to you for our hour here, and even on Facebook, it seems like you're very easy to talk to, very well read, and definitely I think my listeners as well as everyone else on the internet can really benefit from coming at things from a more balanced perspective, which is really refreshing. So yeah, thank you very much for being on the show.
Yes, definitely. Just listen, people. You'll be less stressed out if you listen.
Well, you heard it here, folks. I hope you all have a great time. Thanks for checking out Social Jello with Angelo. As always, follow me on Twitter at Social Jello, Instagram at Social Jello, and on Facebook at Jello Ferrer. Catch y'all later. Peace.